morning, and welcome to Fiber Hooligan. I'm your host, and yes, I'm back. I'm Benjamin Levesay, and for the next hour or so, I'd like to invite you to grab your cup of coffee, tea, or Diet Dr. Pepper, if that's your beverage of choice, and settle in for the 28th episode of Fiber Hooligan. For those of you who are wondering who the heck I am the CEO of XRX Inc., home of Knitters Magazine, XRX Books, and Stitches Expos. And I'm broadcasting live from my home here in Harrisburg, South Dakota. As you all know, I took the last 2 weeks off to work on a project, a technology company with my partner. And during that time, our good friends Teresa and Ron Miskin from the Buffalo Wool Company took over as guest hosts for the show. I think they did a great job interviewing Cornelia Tuttle Hamilton and Drew Amborski in the last two episodes. I wanted to say that Ron and Teresa are two of the best people that I know. There are a lot of people out in the world who talk the talk when it comes to helping others and being a part of a larger community that helps and serves each other. Ron and Teresa are those people that also walk the walk. It's not a marketing game for them. It's who they really are, and I really appreciate them. So thank you, Miskins, for doing a great job with the show, and thank you for being the exceptional people that you are. I also wanted to let you know that I've scheduled Ron and Teresa for an actual interview on Fiber Hooligan on Monday, November 5th. This would give you guys all a chance to hear more about them, and I hope you'll mark that down in your calendars. I'm looking forward to sharing that interview with all of you. Before I get to the show today, I thought I'd give you all an update on the podcaster throwdown for Halos of Hope. Knit Knit Cafe has joined the Rumble. That was about a week and a half ago, and I want to welcome them as our newest team, which now includes the Naughty Girls Knit Cast, the Knitmore Girls Podcast, Craft Lit, Ready Set Knit, Yarn on Tap, and of course our newest entry into the team's Knit Knit Cafe. I was fortunate to spend some time with Jen on her Commuter Knitter podcast last week, and I understand that her listeners are in the process of deciding which team they will be throwing their support to. I think they might be leaning toward the Knitmore Girls, so we'll have to wait and see. According to Nathaniel Apple from Pure Lessons Yarns, on Saturday, Team Knitmore Girls still has a sizable lead on all the other teams. So here's the count so far for hats. Team Knitmore Girls, 68 hats. Team Naughty Girls. Team Craftlit, 3 hats. Team Sockaholic, 24 hats. Team Ready Set Knit, 9 hats. So right now, I think it's fair to say that the Knitmore Girls are the people to beat. I know some of these other teams, and I think that we're going to, you know, still have a nice race in this. For all of you Fiber Arts podcasters, please consider joining the Rumble. We'd love to have you create your own teams and join us for this great charity campaign. If you're curious about the Podcaster Throwdown, and I'd like to invite you to join our Ravelry group, Podcaster Throwdown. We'd love to have your help in this campaign. And please keep listening to Fiber Hooligan. We'll have updates about this charity event at the top of every show. My guest today is the host of the very popular website, ittakesballstoknit.com, and the brand new online knitting variety show, It Takes Balls to Knit, the show. He's an unapologetic knitter who has embraced the internet as a means of empowerment and enhancing the worldwide knitting community. His blog is fantastic, and his new show is extremely entertaining and useful. He is a showman, a wonderful communicator. He has style. He has a passion for the fiber arts world. And in my opinion, he is here to make a difference. He is a man who aspires to knit the world together one stitch at a time, and I stole that directly from his copy. I'm speaking, of course, of my friend, the extremely engaging Steve Malcolm. Steve joins us from Vancouver, British Columbia this morning. Good morning, Steve, and welcome to the show.
Good morning, Benjamin. Thank you so much for having me. This is awesome.
Well, thanks for being here. And how are things in Vancouver this fine morning?
They're really good, really good. We're having another fine fall day, starting off a little foggy, but it tends to burn off before noon. And yeah, the weather's been great, and yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah, I love Vancouver. You know, for our listeners who don't know this, I lived in British Columbia for 7 years. It was there that I met and married my wife, Krista, and where our daughter, Samantha, was born in Cranbrook, British Columbia, a beautiful little town in the Kootenays. And you and I, Steve, have actually spoken before about our BC connections.
Yes, we have. Actually, the girl I'm dating is from Cranbrook. Well, she used to live in Cranbrook. And I never been there before that. I went last summer to visit her, and quaint little town, quaint little town. Not sure I could have lived there as long as you did, but it's fabulous. It's just another part of BC that's very similar to all of BC, which is really nice.
Yeah, it is, but, you know, I mean, for you listeners, that we both know somebody from Cranbrook is actually, I mean, Cranbrook is not like, you know, Reno or Denver, you know, where, you know, it, and yes, it's, you know, there's not a lot of people in Canada, but, it, you know, we tease each other, you know, Steve, I've been there for 7 years, but you know everybody in Canada, right?
Oh, of course I do. I know Bob you know and Doug and yes.
Yes.
Yeah, there's that funny joke about us knowing everybody. But, you know, it's such a friendly country that there are quite often times when you feel that you almost do know everybody. It's really neat.
Well, and, you know, if you think about it, you know, what do they say? It's about 85% of the population lives within 100 miles of the U.S.-Canadian border, and along that border is the Transcan, which ties one end of the country to the other. I mean, you know, it's... There's something to be said for it being, you know, a smallish country, even though it's got a big land.
Yeah. Exactly, exactly. Yeah. And, you know, I don't consider 33 million people a little bit. I know that's small compared to other countries, but that's still a lot of names to try and remember.
It is, and you've got them all down, right?
Every one of them.
We're going to have a quiz later on, Steve. All right. Well, okay, now our listeners are going, okay, are we getting to this interview or are they just going to screw around on the show for a while? We should probably do this. Let's give our listeners a little background about you. Let's call this your pre-fiber arts history. You know, talk to us. Where'd you grow up and what'd you do?
Well, okay, well, I was born in Jamaica, Kingston, but I grew up in, well, not grew up, spent the first 8 years of my life in a town called Clarendon, which is basically right in the center of the island. And my mother had divorced when I was very, very small, so about two or so, and remarried. And then my stepfather basically brought us to Canada in 74. And I remember that specifically because they brought us to Toronto, and it was November of 74. And I honestly have memories of thawing out. Like, I know what a roast feels like when you take it out of the freezer and plop it on the counter. It was so cold. And I'm sure it wasn't colder than any normal Canadian winter, but you can imagine somebody, you know, 8 years in Jamaica, their first exposure to another country is snow and cold and everything else. So I have to say, even to this day, I'm not a big fan of cold, which plays prominently, I think, in my knitting career. But anyway, we were in Toronto then for the next major portion of my life. That's where I went through schooling. And after that, I ended up coming out here into Vancouver, British Columbia in 94. My plan was basically to travel around the world, and I would just work odd jobs everywhere, save up enough money to get to the next spot. But that was August of 94, August 3rd I landed. Every day of that month was what I call a postcard day. Like, I literally could just walk outside, take a picture, and I would have a postcard. It was absolutely spectacular. So I decided that I would start a rollerblading club because I was an inline skater at the time, and I thought there'd be a million clubs out here, and there weren't any. So I thought, okay, you know what? I'm going to stay for one more summer. I'll start a rollerblading club, and that'll be my thing that I do out here. And then from there, I can travel everywhere. And, yeah, what's this, 20 years later, I'm still here. But it's absolutely spectacular. I couldn't imagine being somewhere else right now. And I have had the opportunity to travel some pretty cool places from here. I've done quite a bit in the States. I've gone to Jamaica, back to Jamaica a couple of times. I've gone to Australia three times. I've gone to Cuba and Mexico and the Dominican Republic. So it's been good. It's been good. And now with this new launch in my knitting career, I guess, I'm hoping to travel around the rest of the globe, too. So,
well,
that's me in a nutshell.
That's you in a nutshell. That's your pre-fiber arts history. And before we get to your let's talk about the other side of you, because you have kind of a fun day job.
Yeah. Every now and then I get to pretend I'm somebody that I'm not. I work as an extra on TV shows and movies. And chances are some of you might have even seen me. I've been in quite a few of the more popular shows. Fringe, that was going for a while, Human Target. If anybody knows, if any sci-fi fans are out there and you've watched Stargate, I guarantee you've seen me. I've had quite a few days on some really, really interesting shows.
And do you still do some of that work now?
I do, although I'm scaling that down quite a bit. Right now I'm pretty much just doing commercials, although there's a new series out, I don't even know what network it's on, called Arrow, and it's about the Green Arrow, but they can't call them that for copyright issues and stuff. And I'm a recurring character in the DA's office in that. So if you're watching that this season, you'll probably see me in there. So I do get called in for that, I'd say once or twice every couple of weeks. And then, like I said, the commercials are pretty much most of what I do in that industry right now.
Oh, that's very cool. I'm going to have to, yeah. I just, somebody just said it in the chat room. I'm going to have to go back and rewatch Stargate to see what you are. I'm guessing from your build that you're Jaffa warrior or something like that, right?
I was. Well, actually I was, Baal's Jaffa. He was, the right-hand man. Baal was a system lord. And
right.
He was, I was basically his right-hand man. So, yeah, it was really, really interesting because the day that I was on for that particular episode, it was the day before Amanda Tapping's birthday, and the scene that we were involved in really involved her. And I had captured her, me and my super troopers had captured her. And, you know, we present her to the system lords, and it turns out she's a replicant and whatever, and she ends up killing a couple of them. But after the whole shoot was done, everything else, they start singing happy birthday to her, and I thought, oh, that was cool. So I said to her, hey, that's really cool. My birthday's actually tomorrow. And she says, oh, well, actually tomorrow's my birthday too. They're just doing this today because we're all working. We're not working tomorrow. So she gave me a great big hug and everything else, and that was really, really cool because I really liked Amanda. She is a great person.
That's a very cool story. Yeah, now all of the Bob Hooligan fans will be looking you up and all your stuff. And, you know, you're going to have to post some links up there about what you've been in now on your website. You got to do that. I mean, I know it has nothing to do with
your
fans.
I will do that.
All right. So since we moved into your website, let's talk about that. Let's talk about your blog. You have a great blog with a great title, ittakesballstoknit.com. So let's talk about when and why did you start your blog?
I started the blog, 3.5 years ago now. It's in its fourth year. And basically, I started the blog because I knew, okay, all my life I've known I didn't want to work for anybody. I'm not the kind of person that likes that 9-to-5 or reporting to a boss. I'm actually quite a night owl. And even that, I've worked a few jobs where I've worked nights. And I just didn't like the punching the clock and working hard for somebody else and making somebody else think. So I knew I always wanted to do my own thing. Now, what that own thing was, I didn't know. I love to cook, and I worked as a cook, but I hated working for that. I'm trained in computers. I actually went to DeVry and took computer information systems. And that knowledge and expertise with computers has helped me greatly with my blog and everything. But again, I didn't like working for somebody else. Once I discovered knitting, which I've done in my adult life, and I, you know, basically for the first 10 years or so with that, it was off and on. You know, I would never knit in the summer. In the wintertime, I might knit a sweater or two and a bunch of scarves, that kind of thing. But it wasn't really serious. I was very passionate about it. I always loved it and I loved figuring things out. But, you know, I just didn't see any kind of correlation. And then, about 3 to 4 years ago, I thought, you know what? I'm not getting any younger. So I really have to define my own path in life. Again, I knew I wasn't going to work for somebody, so I thought, let's try this blogging thing and see where it goes from there. But I didn't start it with the intention of it becoming any kind of a financial thing, because everybody's come up to me and said, oh, you should monetize your blog. And I'm like, no, that's not what I wanted to do. I wanted to basically put some feelers out there with this and let it evolve and let it see what it's going to do. All my life, I've loved teaching and I've loved learning. I think the exchange of information is the best gift that we can give to each other. And I thought, if I start a blog, I'll be able to start that flow of information back and forth. Not just me putting words down on the computer and on the internet and people reading it, but from their comments and their questions and queries, I would learn a lot too. So that was literally the reason behind the blog. I thought, let's throw it out there and see what becomes of it.
Well, you threw it out there, and it caught fire. You know, I found it. Several of my friends found it. I mean, it seemed to catch fire. I mean, I obviously it's been out there longer, but especially in this last year, it seems to have really caught fire. And you've got a lot of people coming to your blog at this point.
Yeah, it has caught fire, and it's exactly that within the last year. I have, and that's no slight to the people that have been there since the beginning. I thank them very, very, very much, like everybody that ever comes on there, even if it's just for 10 seconds to look at it and then say, yeah, whatever. I thank everybody that visits it. But yeah, over the last year, things have picked up drastically. So
they have.
Yeah, I'm appreciative
now, before we move on to the next little piece, you've got a great story about how you became a knitter. Would you mind sharing that with the fiber hooligans?
Sure. I used to, like I said, I was trained in computers, and when I came out of DeVry, I was living in Toronto at the time, and I worked in the downtown financial district down at Dane King, for anybody that knows the Toronto area. And on my way to work one day, I was working for Osler Hoskin and Harcourt, which is a very, very large law firm. And as you can imagine, there were 700, I'll say secretaries for the lack of a better word, but basically assistants to the lawyers, and 250 lawyers and a whole bunch of them partners and everything else. And I was in charge of the computer room in terms of keeping, you know, everything flowing and all that. So I was on my way to work one day, and I look into the store, and there's this gorgeous, gorgeous white sweater. And at the time, I probably owned about 30, 35 sweaters. I own quite a few. I love sweaters. I always love sweaters. But for me, they have to hit me right when I see them. There's no going back and looking and thinking, oh, yeah, maybe. No. I literally see it, and it's like, I have to have it. So there's this gorgeous white sweater. It's got some ultra suede patches in it, and it was just, it was stunning. It was stunning. That's all I can say. And so I'm like, okay, I got to have this one. I walk into the store, and you have to remember, this was in 1994, 93 possibly, and this is a machine knit sweater, and I walk in, I look at the price tag, and it's $500. Needless to say, I'm like, oh, crap. So I sheepishly put it back and, you know, make my way out, because obviously I'm not going to drop $500 on a sweater. Literally, I mean, I don't sleep a whole lot anyway, but literally I could not sleep for the next 2 days. So I decided I'm going to go back and I'm going to go get that sweater. And I go back. I'm planning to ask the guy, okay, do you guys do layaway? If they don't, I'm saying, okay, can you hold it for me till Friday when I get paid? And, you know, I'll figure out my rent issues some other way or whatever. I was going to get that sweater. And I go in and it's gone, so I'm thinking they've just moved it. And I ask the guy, what happened to the sweater that was in the window? Somebody had bought it the day before. And I was like just, I was leveled. I can't even tell you. But instead of getting really upset about it, I just thought, okay, you know what? I fully believe there's no coincidences. Everything does happen for a reason. So I decided that I would learn to knit and make my own sweater. And that was my goal with knitting. It wasn't to become a blogger or anything else. It was literally to be able to conceive a sweater in my head and make it. And I bought the book Susan Bates Learn to Knit, taught myself how to knit, and then literally The very first thing I made was a sweater. It wasn't that sweater. It wasn't actually anything even close to a really, really nice sweater. But I kept that sweater for about 15 years because it was the very, very first thing I made. And, you know, even that story behind that sweater has a few issues in it where it was the wrong size. I had to rip the side down and insert a seam and everything else. And it was all really advanced things. And I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, this isn't as easy as it looks at all. But I'm very, very stubborn. And especially for something that I want like that, I'm like a dog with a bone. You can't stop me. So I've kept at it. I've kept at it. And then when I came to BC, I've actually got more interested in the knitting. I've worked in a total of 3 different yarn shops out here. And yeah, the bug just bit me. I mean, it's a perfect place for sweaters. And I just love doing it.
Well, it's a great story. And you moved on to the next area that I wanted to ask you about, which is, okay, you've worked in some local yarn stores. And that's a real educational experience because you have to combine the education process with the end consumer and the retail and the making of the money and the everything. I mean, it's a lot of work. It's a lot harder to be a local yarn store owner than people think it is, I think.
Oh my gosh, it's incredible the amount of stuff that goes on. It's one of those things. I am so grateful that I did actually work in these shops because it's given me an experience beyond measure. One shop in particular, there was a lady named Kathleen that kind of took me under her wing, and she's taught me so much. But by seeing the back end, I've come to appreciate what the local yarn shop owners have to go through. And it gives me a perspective unlike any other because you literally see everything. I mean, people think, oh, you get to work in a yarn shop. You're going to sit around and knit all day. And it's like, woohoo. And yeah, there's so much more to it. I mean, from ordering the yarn and even that, you're doing that months ahead of time. Like for the spring yarns, they're trying to clear out right now. We're in October. The yarn shops are obviously, they've already geared up for Christmas. But as soon as that's done, they're going to have to be trying to get rid of the yarns that are in there right now and getting the spring stuff that they probably already ordered in. They have to budget like crazy. I mean, it's not like having your own private yarn stash that you can sit there and just pull stuff away from. You have to budget and be disciplined and know that, you know, that's got to go and that's got to go. Dealing with customers, oh my gosh. Like, seriously, customer service today is, and not just in yarn shops, but customer service today is probably the most difficult thing to do because you've got that adage, the customer's always right. But in a situation where you're in a yarn shop and you're dealing with somebody on such a personal level and about such a personal thing, it's even more true. And you have to tune into what that customer wants and what they need more so than, you know, if I was in a knife shop selling people knives or, you know, clothing store or whatever, selling them things that are already are made. But then at the same time, you also have to be careful of your time. You get me in a yarn shop and you start me talking. I can talk to you for hours. Literally hours about, you know, anything knitting. And of course there's other customers, and that customer in particular came in for a certain need. So you have to be really, really careful with your time. I was kind of an oddity in all the yarn shops I've worked in because here I was a guy and I wasn't gay and I was really helping and informative and everything else. So people didn't always know how to take me. So I would always get a lot of customers coming to me and asking me things directly. And again, yeah, I just had to be really, really careful that I don't give away too much information. Because, you know, if somebody came and asked me, how do I do this or how do I do that? I'd be so happy to show them. But then, you know, my boss is there saying, hey, come on, get to the next customer, make them sign up for lessons or whatever. You had to keep track of stock and doing the stock. That was hours. Inventorying a yarn store has got to be the hardest thing I've ever done. Like, it's crazy. It's absolutely crazy how much yarn. You know, I'm everybody here, everybody listening to the show has their own little stash, I'm sure. And that stash will vary in size. But imagine if that is now your business and you've got an entire shop. And we're talking before modern times, like 15, 20 years ago, when it wasn't just a matter of scanning in a barcode and boom, 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 it's there. I mean, back those systems were just being brought in. So it was a matter of literally going and counting every ball of yarn that was in a shop. And it was just, yeah, it was very, very, very informative. And the one thing I learned from doing that was that I don't want to own a yarn shop. I love the fact that they're out there. I still prefer to go to a yarn shop than shopping online, without a doubt. But I applaud everybody that owns one and runs one, because it's just not something that I would be able to do.
Well, it is hard. I remember doing it when I was a kid. And you're right, inventorying yarn and then finding the boxes of stuff that you can't match up with anything at the back. And, you know, what's the
matching dye lots.
Matching dye lots. Yeah, that's a rough gig. Okay, well, it's good that you had that. And that moved on to, of course, your knitting and your blog. And your blog, it's got a nice sensibility to it, and you've extended it now. And I want to talk about your newest venture. It's your, you call it a knitting variety show. It takes balls to knit this show.
Right.
What possessed you to start such an ambitious venture? Why?
It's evolution. That's all I can say. I actually had this idea to do this a couple of years ago, because the reason why I do anything most of the time is that it's not there, or it's something that I want, but I can't find it. And I started the blog on the same premise. I basically wanted information, and I wanted to communicate with people out there, and there was no other way for me at the time to do that. The show now is just an extension of the blog, because what I found is I'm not able to communicate with as many people as I would like to communicate with on the blog. There's more information out there that I want to learn and I want to pass on than I can do through a blog post. When I first started the blog, I was doing a post a day, but then I found out that that was too much and people were inundated and they just couldn't handle all of that. Then I slowed it down. It's about two or three a week. And last year, it slowed way down as I was doing a lot of work with the show, groundwork. But yeah, I just thought, you know what, if I put a show out once a week and I literally cover the A to Z of knitting, hey, if you build it, they'll come. Everybody will come and watch the show. But more than that, I would then have the opportunity to do a lot of the other things that I want to do, which is basically, well, not a lot of the other things, but the main thing I want to do is travel around the world with knitting. I want to go around the entire world and literally learn about knitting everywhere out there. And along the way, I want to pass that information on to whoever I can. So I talked to a couple of friends that are in the industry, a producer and a writer, and we sat down for about 18 months, actually, from time to time, like, you know, once or twice a month kind of thing, we would get together and we'd do our powwows and we had our agendas and our timetables and we'd figure out where we are in this project. But it took us that long to figure out that, you know what, we can't do this. It's just, there's not a network out there that wants to buy it, that thinks that there's a viable audience. And even if they had, we would be limited by the geography of wherever we were. And, you know, being in Vancouver, BC, like, you know, I'm not even in an American city. If I was in an American city, I could possibly see having a show with an audience big enough geographically that it would make it viable and I could possibly sell it to somebody. But in Vancouver, it was, much, much more difficult. So I basically shelved the idea and got rid of it. Not got rid of it, but put it way at the back of my mind. And then in a knitting group that I helped a friend of mine run, I met this girl named Carla on a set of a show that I was doing, a year ago. And she wanted to learn to knit. So I told her about the knitting group that I helped run with Anne. And she came out on the Sunday, and then we got talking. And she told me about Vimeo. She says, well, you can put your you can put this show up on Vimeo, because if you spend any amount of time with me, we'll get to knitting. We'll talk about knitting, and I'll tell you about what I want to do and everything else. And that's what had happened with Carla. And she told me about Vimeo. She says, well, you can do the show and put it on Vimeo, and, you know, people will, they have an on-demand system, and people buy it. And I'm like, seriously? So for the past 6 months, I've been working tirelessly to get the show up and running. And yeah, it's there. And so now what I want to do is basically let everybody know about it, and hopefully everybody will end up watching it and, yeah, picking up the subscription for it and buying it. And then that way we will get to travel literally around the world and not just cover the stuff that we wanted to cover, but the stuff that everybody else wants us to cover and meet people. I mean, I have so many knitting friends. I have well over 800-900 knitting friends on Facebook alone. But, you know, you don't get to meet them all. And, well, you get to meet very few. And I actually do want to meet them. I want to give them some hugs and say, hey, how are you? And, you know, that kind of thing. So the show for me is just a natural extension of it's just a natural way to accomplish all of that. And along the way, I'll get to teach and I'll get to learn, which are the two things that I like to do the most.
Well, I love the show. It, you know, it's a hard concept to go out there to the world and say, you know, hey, this is a show that you're going to pay for. So much of the internet and what people get on the internet is for free, you know, through YouTube.
Right.
And I think it's really important for our listeners to understand this is not a video blog. It's not. This is a very well done, a great production value with a lot of value and a lot of different segments that really do have educational and entertainment value. I mean, this is worth paying for. So case to the Fiber Hooligans, because this is a brand new kind of a concept, you know, hey, this is a paper model for, you know, video content in the knitting world. Take us through your show, if you would. How do you structure it? What kind of segments and content do you have on your show?
Well, the main premise of the show was to have, like you said, to have some value. Like, I don't want somebody coming on and just watching me talk or listening to me talk for, you know, 20 minutes, half an hour, whatever. So I thought what would be really cool is if we had a show that had what I call Knit School. And in Knit School, either myself or Rena, who appears as my co-host from time to time, we will teach you how to do a particular thing, a skill or a technique. And again, the first thought and the thing that I hear the most is, yeah, but why wouldn't I just go on YouTube and, you know, search for that and whatever? And by all means, everybody can. But the reason I'm doing this show is because I've been there too, and I've done that too. That whole thing, you get what you pay for, that comes through. In Knit School, we're actually teaching a student. So we actually have somebody beside us. And that was really, really important for me. Because what I find is that if you ask me how to do something and have me video it, I'll go through it and I'll just do it, and that's fine. But if you actually have me teach somebody that doesn't know how to do that thing, I am going to have to do that step by step. I can't miss anything because they're going to actually ask me, well, how'd you go from A to C? Like, where's B kind of thing? So in Knit School, we make sure that we're always teaching somebody, and they don't know how to do the particular thing, or they don't know how to do it well, or, you know, the way we do it. So that was important to me. I have a phenomenal, phenomenal camera guy, Michael Hay, and he captures the work that we're doing, like, so well and edits it so well, so it's great. So, yeah, every episode of It Takes Balls to Knit, the show, has a Knit School segment where we're going to teach you something. And with the first four or five episodes that we put up, it's, you know, it's a basic stuff, cast on, cast off, knit and purl. But now that we've covered that, we're now able to open everything up. And we try and put the stuff out in such a way that even advanced knitters will want to watch it, and they'll learn things. Like, we have the tips and tricks and stuff like that. Or we'll show you two different ways to do something, like the knit stitch. I show the continental and the traditional and the continental. Then after Knit School, we have two other segments, and those two other segments is where we get to have a lot of fun because we literally cover everything in knitting. In the promos, I say we go A to Z of knitting, so we do from alpacas to zebra balls. And everybody's like, what are zebra balls? I'm like, well, you have to watch the show to find out. But for those of you that don't know, zebra balls are the sock yarn. They're from Germany, and it's fantastic. It's like 250 grams that's in a great big ball of yarn. And my show is it takes balls to knit, so it's like a natural segue into it. It's really, really cool. But we have a whole bunch of segments that we're developing, and we've got the concepts down. It's just a matter now of going out and shooting them. We have what we call Real Knits, R-E-E-L, which is knitting in the television and the film industry. And what's really cool is because of my background in that, I have access to some people that, you know, I just normally wouldn't, or it would be a lot more difficult. There's a few productions. There's one here called Once Upon a Time that's filmed here in Vancouver. And it's about, in a nutshell, it's about Rumpelstiltskin and the fairy Sleeping Beauty and Prince Charming. But it's got a lot of knitting tie-ins. There's a blanket that Sleeping Beauty, Snow White was wrapped in when she was a baby that was actually knit here. Rumpelstiltskin spins straw into gold. Well, there's a natural spinning tie-in. So they actually bring in a spinner as a consultant to teach them how to do it and everything else. And it is really, really cool. So that is going to be awesome once we get some of those segment shots. We have Dying to Knit You, which is all about dyeing your yarn. And we actually did one really cool segment on that already. We have some upcoming ones where we're going to get some kids dyeing yarn with Kool-Aid and all that other kind of stuff. Oh my gosh, what else is there? We have All About You, EWE, and that's Rena's specialty. She loves yarn. She loves the different fibers and the sheep. And she'll be going out and talking about all the different kinds of sheep breeds that there are, and not just sheep, alpacas and llamas. We've got alpaca farms and llama farms here, which is fantastic because we'll be going to some of them and doing that. Oh, gosh, I had another really cool one that was top of my head. We're literally covering everything. We're doing yarn bombing. If people don't know, the authors of the very popular book Yarn Bombing are actually Vancouverites. So we're going to be talking to them directly and dealing with yarn bombing. We have your daily fiber, where we're going to showcase a fiber. The first one will be coming up in the next couple episodes is all about silk. And we have some ladies here that have some fair trade silk that they get from Bali. And it's just fantastic, fantastic stuff. So we'll be talking about that. A Stitch in Time is going to be a segment on the history of knitting, and not like a boring history class, but like talking about, you know, well, how did all those mariner sheep get to Australia? Because, you know, 250 years ago, Australia was nothing, right? And, you know, we'll talk about the shipment of the sheep from Spain to Australia and how that's become a thing. Kiviat is now a big popular yarn that everybody is really, really interested in, and we'll talk about that. The possum yarn that Zilana has now made really popular, that will be showcased, all that kind of stuff. I have a friend, a very good friend of mine now, that actually was a fan of my blog that you know, Benjamin. Her name's Tammy, and she's going to be our online correspondent because Tammy is invaluable. Like, she scours the internet and she knows about all these really, really cool things, so she'll be doing that. I have a friend in Germany, Claudia, who I taught to knit during a commercial shoot in Vancouver. She was in Vancouver for a year, and we were on a commercial together, and she saw me knitting. She's like, can you show me how to do that? And literally that day, she learned how to knit, and now she's just, good Lord, I can't even tell you how much she knits. She is amazing. So she's going to be, we have a segment that we're going to call Abroad Knitting. Because, well, for me, she's abroad, which is across the ocean, but she's also a lady, so abroad. And she'll be covering Europe for us in the beginning until we can actually get over there. And we have, like, literally dozens of segments and ideas like that that we're going to do. And it's basically just to get people out there because, as I tell everybody, there's so much that you don't know. And it's in the knitting world, that's so true. Like, so true. There is so much out there that's going on in this knitting world, and that's one of the things I love about it. Even though when it comes to knitting, my passion is to knit sweaters. I'd sit and knit sweaters every day if I could and you know, put cables in there. There is so much more out there. Like, there's socks, this has, I mean, preaching to the choir here, I don't have to tell everybody here, but there is so much out there that we want to go out and explore and discover that, yeah, we think that it's going to be fun. And then in between all those segments, we have our little, what we call our transition segments, which ties the one segment to the next, or it possibly doesn't. It's just, they maybe are tied together themselves. The next episode coming up has a really cool transition segment thing that you guys will love, absolutely love. But in those segments, we're going to have little contests and giveaways and tie-ins. And bring this whole thing together, what we're going to do is have a lot of interaction with our audience through the show and through the blog. So once we put up a show episode, and this is something that we're just starting now, we're going to have follow-up blog posts about it, and we're going to announce things in the show that we deal with on the blog, so that if you miss one or the other, you can still find out about it and then go and check it out. And yeah, and that's a show in a nutshell.
Well, that's a lot of information. And again, I want to reiterate that this is not a video blog. This is you doing a lot of work, a lot of research. There's a lot of content in here.
Yeah, we shoot for hours, and then Michael gets to go home and go through the footage and edit it, just like a regular, you know, Hollywood production. Obviously, it's not at their level, budget-wise and everything else. But we feel that the quality of it is, well, it's far better than what you'd find on YouTube and everything else. And, yeah, it's, for me, it's about value. I have to put out, whether the show's 25 minutes or 35 minutes, there's got to be value in it. There's got to be a reason why I would pay $3 to go and watch that episode, or $10 to watch them all in the month, whatever. So it is, yeah, definitely not a video blog. It's not something that... you know, it's expensive to produce and whatever, but we feel that there's definitely quality to it.
Well, I agree. How many episodes do you have up right now?
We're putting up, if we include the pilot episode, the fifth episode is being uploaded right now. It's actually episode 4, but we did do a pilot episode earlier. So we have the fifth one is up, and, well, it'll be up, finished in about 2 hours. The upload to Vimeo isn't the quickest thing. But then we now have 2 that are what we call in the can, in terms of we've shot the segments, but we haven't edited it and put it together. The transition segments might not be shot yet, but, you know, it's a continual process. So
I want to make sure that our listeners understand how they can get up there, how they can look at the free trailers, and how they can buy this. Where do they go, and what do they do? Can you explain the logistics of this?
Actually, right now we're in the process of renovating all of that. So after about 2 o'clock Pacific time this afternoon, if you go on the blog, it takes balls2knit.com, or go on the website, so it's not just the blog anymore. If you go on the website, ittakesballsinit.com, you're going to see 3 pictures of me at the bottom. You'll see one main picture that's a slider, and it changes. And then on the bottom, you'll see the show, the blog, and hugs. Now, hugs is a link that takes you to just the thing telling you about me. The blog takes you to the blog that has always been there. And the one that you want is the one that's called the show. And you can't miss it. And that'll take you to our show page. And then, like I said, after about 2 o'clock this afternoon, what's going to be on that main page is a video tutorial. Because, like I said, navigating Vimeo wasn't the seamless transition we thought it was going to be. So there's a video tutorial on how to actually access the blog, or access the show, and what to look for. There will also be the pilot episode, which will now reside fully on that page, so that you can watch that first pilot episode and see what it's like and see if it's something that you would be interested in. And then there'll be a video link to the current episode, whatever that happens to be. That will get changed every week, because we're putting out 1 episode a week. They're usually uploaded and ready to go on a Sunday. Last week we had some technical issues, and this week again, but hopefully we've got them totally figured out now. So Yeah, and it literally tells them everything. But basically, from the video link, it takes you to our Vimeo On Demand page, which works just kind of like Netflix. You can go on Netflix and you can watch it streaming, or you can download it, I believe. Well, this is how ours is set up, where it takes you to a Vimeo page, and you'll see three options. One is $10, buy all. What that allows you to do is to get every episode that we put up in that series. So every month we start a new series, and there'll be a minimum of 4 videos every month for 4 weeks. Sometimes there'll be 5, like this time, because we started September 29th, there's actually 5 in this series. And we'll also put up special episodes. We're doing a special Christmas episode. We're coming out to Stitches, and we're going to do some shooting out there. So we're going to do a special episode for that. When we get some really interesting guests in that, we'll try and get an episode up. So if you do the $10 buy all, you will get everything that we put up within that month. You'll also get entered into some contests and giveaways that nobody else gets entrance into. Then, or if you don't want to do that, you can actually select to watch either streaming each individual episode, or you can buy each individual episode. Now, if you just want to watch it on your computer, it's $2, and you get 72 hours to watch it from the time that you actually say yes, you want that. But for the better option, obviously, is to pay the extra dollar, and then you can download it, because the stuff from the instruction from like Knit School, that's something that you'll want to have that you can go back and, you know, review from time to time.
Well, that's great. Can you share with us some sneak peeks of who, besides, you gave, drop some, any big names or anybody that you have on that you can tease us with a little bit?
Yeah, well, we actually, the episode that's uploading right now has Amy Detjen in it and Lee Gantz.
Okay.
And Amy is, some of you may know, the big time knitter. She does the summer camps with Meg Swanson, the knit camps, who you had on the show just a few weeks back. And we cover the sweater curse. Now, it's not just Amy in it. The sweater curse is – I love this episode because it's really neat. I wrote a poem for the transition segments that deals with the sweater curse. And it's done – shot around a campfire. It's really, really eerie, and it's really, really cool. I love this last episode. We're having a big event called Knit City coming up this weekend in Vancouver here. And Fiona Ellis from Toronto is going to be out here. So we're going to be doing a shoot with her. And then as we start traveling, we want to get everybody. I have my list, obviously, of people that I have to get on the show. But it's a matter of, you know, working in the time and scheduling it. So it's really cool. Cornelia Tettle Hamilton, who was on the show week before last. I've got her slated for a segment coming up very soon as well. And yeah, it's just everybody. I mean, we will eventually get everybody. It's going to be really, really neat.
But it's kind of funny. I was emailing Fiona this morning because I have her scheduled on in 2 weeks. I do. And I was trying to coordinate with her and to do, you know, just a little bit of and she said she was going to be in Vancouver, and I thought I should tell her to drop in to see Steve. Well, obviously I don't need to do that.
I'm going to make Fiona some dinner, I think. I'm going to see if she has time to come over for dinner, and we'll chat and knit and hug and have a great time.
Well, she's a pretty exceptional lady, and you know your show so far, you've done a nice job of it. And you alluded to this earlier. Let's just throw it out there in case people missed it.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that you're coming to a fiber arts event in the next couple of weeks.
I am. You have so graciously invited myself and my crew to come out there. That like it's just, I mean, this is something I've wanted to do for a long time. It's kind of like the Grand Slam events in tennis. That's okay. So you know your dream about being a walker Walking Dead.
You were watching that? Okay, I got a parenthetical. Last night on Facebook, I actually posted, I have a dream. It's a small dream, but a dream. I want to be a walker, which is a zombie, on The Walking Dead and be killed by Daryl or Carl, you know, a boy from the Midwest can dream. And I'm always surprised that somebody like you reads that and even listens to it. But okay.
Oh, absolutely. I love that show. I love that show. And I have a couple of dreams with regards to shows, too. I never thought of that one, though. That's absolutely brilliant. But like that, I have this dream of doing all the Grand Slam events in tennis in 1 year, right? Like in one calendar year. I've had that same dream with the Stitches events. I want to come to all of them, all four of them in one calendar year. And when I started doing this show, you know, we're at a production meeting, and the first thing I say to them is, okay, look, we got to hit these events. And the number one on there was Stitches. And I'm like, well, that's kind of soon. Because this was, what, middle of August? And when I say hit it, I'm talking, like, not just me going, because, you know, I can pretty much get up and do that, however, even if I had to walk or drive or whatever. But, like, me taking a crew and then a compliment. And I thought, well, you know, yeah, it's soon, but... You know, I'm sure once we get an episode out and we talk to the guys and everything else, maybe, you know, we can figure something out and work out some kind of deal, whatever. And then you so graciously invited us to come that it was just like, oh, my gosh. Again, nothing happens out of, like, there's no coincidences. So we will be in Charlotte, and we will be at the Stitches, and it's going to be amazing. Amazing. Like, I can't wait. I cannot wait. And the great thing is that I've never been to a Stitches event. But for Michael, who's the camera guy, and Brooke and Tammy, they've never been either. But I don't think any of them have been to any kind of an event, like knitting event like this. Well, I'm sure they haven't. So it's going to be such a really cool experience for all of us. And I know that Michael will be capturing it from our POVs rather than us having, yes, we'll try and set up things and then get specific segments shot, but it's going to be really, really neat because I think we're going to be able to capture what it's like for somebody to come to that event. And we'll obviously put that up as an episode on the show. That one will actually probably be a free one that we put on our blog. And so people can see what an amazing event this is and how cool it is to go to something like that. So yeah, we can't wait for that. That's going to be like, that's going to be the highlight of my year for sure.
Well, I mean, I'm really looking forward to it too. You know, I've of course been reading your blog and watching your show now, and I have I've met Tammy. You know, we have a mutual connection with Tammy Burke in person. She has actually gone to a show because I actually met her at the last Sock Summit in Portland. So she's been to a show before, but she's never been to a Stitches yet. And I'm really looking forward to having her there too. So it's you and it's Tammy and it's Michael, your cameraman.
Michael.
Is anybody else coming?
Yeah. Brooke Davison, who's one of our regular students. And she's a fairly new knitter, but she's one of these people, like, you know how it is. You get bit by the bug and you have to knit, you have to do whatever. So yeah. I met her on set as well. Actually, we were married on set. And the funny thing about this whole production and how things are working for me right now, everybody seems to just fall into place. Like, I don't have to go out of my way to find whoever. Tammy has been following my blog literally since day one. And they had the Stitch and Pitch in Seattle this year. Probably about 2.5-3 months before the Stitch and Pitch, Tammy sent me an email saying, hey, are you going to Stitch and Pitch? And I said, yeah, I'm planning on it. Because Seattle, for everybody that doesn't know, is like literally a 2.5-hour drive from Vancouver. So I'm like, yeah, I'm definitely planning to go. And she made it a point to find out exactly where I was sitting. Then during the event, she came and introduced herself. And it was just amazing. It was absolutely amazing. And it was literally right at that time that we would start shooting for the show. And, you know, because we realized, hey, we're going to actually do this. So it was just then that we started shooting for the show. And I just proposed to her that, hey, would you be willing to do the online correspondent stuff for us, because I mean she does that all anyway, and she's a fantastic resource for that. And yeah, and she was on board. Michael, the camera guy, is a good friend of mine, and he's somebody that I've worked with in the past. Brooke, we literally met on set. We were paired together as a couple for this new show coming out, Almost Human, and we had just lost our teenage daughter, so we were in the police station and, you know, crying and stuff and whatever. And we just hit it off. Like, we had this connection that was just great. And yeah, I found out she just started knitting and wanted to learn more. So now she's become a student. And people just seem to be falling in a place. Carla, I told you a story about Carla already. People just seem to be falling in a place like that. So it's just, it's great. It's great. I love it.
Well, yeah, your stuff is good. I think you tend to inspire people around you, the quality of your work, your enthusiasm. And one of the hot button subjects for you that I think resonates with people, and it certainly resonates with me, is empowerment and education. I'd like to ask you to talk about that a little bit, please, and how those sensibilities affect your work and your blog and your show.
Well, like I've said already, is that the best thing for me, the greatest gift for me is learning and teaching. I think it's unfortunate we live in a society where, you know, professional athletes are making millions and millions of dollars a year, and teachers are just barely getting by. Because I think that the teachers and their students are the key to the future. If we don't find a better way of educating our young, we're going to be in serious trouble. And for me, it's all about that. It's all about teaching and learning, and it's something. It's like a hug. You can't give a hug without getting one back. You can't teach somebody something without learning something in return. And regardless whether people know it or not, there's a lot of stuff out there that they want to learn. They might not even realize it, but that they want to learn it, or they have information that it would be great to share it. So I try and get them to go out and step out of their comfort zone and learn it. We just shot a segment on cables with Brooke, and she honestly loves to knit. She loves cables, but she never wanted to do cables because they look too complicated. And we did the segment with her, and she's just like, oh my gosh, like, this was after. She's like, that really wasn't very hard. And, you know, that to me is what it's all about. That makes it so worthwhile. If I can get somebody to do something that they're not used to doing, or that they're not entirely comfortable doing, not obviously nothing, you know, that's going to be detrimental to them in any way, but something that they didn't realize they could do, if I can get them to actually attempt it, that's beyond measure. And it all stems from the fact that when I wanted to learn to knit, when I first said, I'm going to make that sweater, I didn't have YouTube and, you know, the internet, and I couldn't go on there and dig up all this information. Heck, there wasn't even a yarn shop near me. I had to go. I bought the book from a regular bookstore and had to teach myself to knit. And I know that had I had somebody to take me under their wing and teach me, I would have been far more accomplished in terms of what I've done and whatever, in the knitting world. And I basically want to save people that. There's no reason to go through the school of hard knocks in pretty much anything, but especially in knitting. There are so many wonderful, wonderful, wonderful resources out there that I think it's just a matter of pointing people in the right direction, saying, well, you can go here, 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 talk to this person or this person, and you'll learn how to do it.
Well, I think you're right on the money here. Are you going to be appearing anywhere in the coming months, shop shows? You know, we've already talked about Stitches East, of course, but anywhere else that you want to tell our listeners about?
Well, we were hoping to get to Vogue. I don't know if we're going to. I'm pretty sure we're not going to, not as a large group. If it works out and I'm able to, I'll just pop in and say hi. But we'll definitely be there in January for that. And then outside of that, we'll be at the Knit City here in Vancouver, but I imagine a lot of your viewers are in the States, and that's quite a hike for them. But yeah, no, we don't have any concrete plans yet But again, this is the first month in for us with the show. We're definitely going to be traveling through Washington and Oregon in the next month and a half and doing a few segments there. So we'll basically keep people updated on the website if we are traveling anywhere.
That's great. Are there any shout-outs you'd like to give anyone or reminders about anything that you're working on?
Oh, my gosh. Do you have another 2 or 3 hours? I would love to just say thank you to everybody. And I know that sounds very general, but it's
it's okay.
Well, I honestly don't know where that came from. Holy crow. I'm sorry.
Take your time, Steve. It's fine. A lot of people out there to thank, I'm sure.
There are so many people out there to thank, and there's so many more that I will be thanking in the future. You know, nobody gets anywhere on their own. And even though I had to buy a book and teach myself how to knit, that was just literally the start. And there have been so many people along the way that have helped me to get to here that, you know, I couldn't even possibly begin with names. And they know who they are, and I will be sending them personal thank yous. But yeah, if you've had any contact with me whatsoever, you've probably impacted me more than you know. And I just want to say thank you to everybody that's helped me to get to where I am right now. And that's in any capacity, not just in the knitting. So thank you. And Benjamin, thank you so much for this opportunity. This is, if you had told me at the beginning of the year that, you know, I'd be doing this, I'd have been like, yeah, right. But you're literally helping me realize a dream, and that's not something we get to do often. So thank you. Thank you.
No, thank you. Just keep on keeping on, Steve. I mean, this is what needs to happen, and there needs to be passionate people behind the wheel with a sensibility that are going to help people. So, you know, this is what we're supposed to be doing. I'm going to wrap this up with you. Your sentiments are beautiful, but is there any last words you wanted to say before we slid on out of here today?
Go for it. Go for it. Like, literally. You look at me, you would never think that I'm a knitter and that, you know, this is what I've chosen as my life's work. And I don't even consider it work. It's just my passion. I know there's a lot of people out there thinking that, and again, not just in knitting, but in anything that they want to do, thinking that, well, gee, there's so many reasons why I can't do it. All you need is one reason why you can, and that reason is because you want to. And if there is anything you want to do, go for it. Don't let anybody stop you.
That's a great place to end. I want to thank you again for joining us today, Steve, and I want to wish you the best of luck with your show. And I want to let you know that I'm looking forward to seeing you in a few weeks at Stitches East in Hartford, Connecticut.
That will be awesome. I'm looking forward to meeting you, too.
All right. Thanks, Steve.
Okay. Thanks, Benjamin.
That was the very entertaining and extremely heartwarming Steve Malcolm. You can read his blog and find out more about his show at ittakesballstoknit.com, and that's when you're going to want to bookmark. This week, we have a surprise. We actually have a new segment that we're going to add to Barbara Hooligan, and it's going to sound like Steve and I had the same idea, but it honestly was independent, and but we are joined by one common person that helps us out both a lot. For those of you who follow the Fiber Hooligans Ravelry group, our Fiber Hooligans Facebook group, you know that we are blessed to have a wonderfully talented and generous moderator for both of those groups. I first met her in person at the last Sock Summit, where she was wearing her version of one of Brooke Nico's designs from Knitters Magazine, issue 100. I think it was called Daydreams and Lace. Since then, she's been so helpful with the show, as well as just a very positive person online, which is something I respect and admire. So I've asked her to join us on each show as our roving virtual reporter to tell us about the things that she's seen in the Barber world that she thinks we should know about, stuff that's cool, just stuff that she wants to talk about. With that, I'd like to introduce my friend and fellow fiber hooligan, Tammy Burke. Tammy joins us from Boise, Idaho this morning. Good morning, Tammy, and welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good morning.
Well, there you are. You're on.
I am. How cool was that?
That was very cool. This is great. I'm very excited to have you on the show. You've been, you've been a part of this since the very beginning, and I know that your segment is going to be very, very cool.
Thank you. I just want to say, isn't Steve wonderful? You know, there's not a lot of people outside of the fiber world that I've met that are that heartfelt. So I'm really glad that the fiber hooligans listening today got to meet him.
I am too. He, he's a charming guy. He's a real guy. I was pretty touched by him actually. So.
Yeah.
Anyway, so
yeah.
Let's get back to you. I know that in future episodes you're going to be sharing with us what Steve is doing because you're going to be doing some work as well. I'm sure there's going to be some cross-pollination there. But
sure.
So far, you've got something else. So what would you like to share with the Fiber Hooligans today in your segment?
The only thing I want to back up real quick on is that there was one person that was involved in meeting both you and Steve. For me, and that was J.J. Foster. J.J. is the one that dragged me to meet you at Sock Summit that time when I was too scared to come up and say hello. And J.J. picked me up at the airport in Portland and drove me to Seattle for the Stitch and Pitch where I got to meet Steve. So that was, and I really have to say thank you, because, you know, she made it happen for me. Everybody has somebody like that, and I don't want to forget to say thank you. I did want to talk about Fiber Factor today. With you.
Very cool.
And the reason for that is because they're on Challenge 6 right now, which is they're saying on that challenge that it's the last one. So this is everybody's opportunity to get all caught up with all of the videos, if they haven't been watching it, to know what to figure out what it's all about, if you watched a few and you missed a couple, this is your opportunity again, like I said, to get all caught up and ready for the final outcome.
Well, I'm thinking that the Fiber Factor is a pretty cool thing. Of course, our crew has been involved in it. For our listeners that may not know a lot about the Fiber Factor, can you give us a little background?
Sure. It was Fiber Factor is sponsored by Scassell, and Karen Scassell is one of the two primary judges throughout this whole thing. Scassell is the company that offers the Addy needles, so everybody knows who they are. This is a video program, and it started back last spring. They started asking for people to submit, and they selected 12 contestants. These 12 contestants were challenged with each of these six challenges. They were given some parameters. A lot of times it's something that's marketable, but they wanted you to pursue this certain avenue, and it got to be really challenging after episode 4 when they sent everybody a knitting machine. So take all your 12 hand knitting designers and ask them to knit with a machine. So they had to learn to use the machine and then turn something that would be sellable out of it. This is just like really pushing the boundaries for each of these 12 individuals. And then the last, number 5, they had to use art felt paper and use also a non-traditional product, some component to their designs. So I've been watching them. I have to admit that I was at Stitch and Pitch and the Scassell booth was there for the vendors, and I did not know what it was about. And that was like after 2 or 3 challenges that had already gone by. And I fell in love with the two items that they brought to Stitch and Pitch to show everybody. I was just totally blown away with how cool they were, you know, really well thought out and advanced. It's not simple. They're not turning out a simple product. It's something really well thought out, wonderful designs fashion-wise. And so, in fact, this last, the number 5 had it had to be fast, runway worthy, they called it. Lots of different judges. Oh, my goodness. Everybody that you can think of in the knitting world, besides Karen Scassell, the other regular judge was Cyrilla Rose, but Josh Bennett has been mentoring all along with each different challenge. Kat Bordy and Franklin Habit and Yosilda Teague, they were some of the earlier judges. Clear through, like you said, Elaine Rowley and Rick Mondragon from XRX were both knitters. I think that was the third or fourth challenge. Stephen West has been a judge. Jennifer Burt from Love of Knitting. Stephen Berg was just in the last of Stephen B. from in Minnesota was just on the last challenge. Challenge 6 coming up, they're saying Nikki Epstein is going to be one of the judges, and then Tricia Malcolm from Vogue Knitting and Carla Scott from Knit Simple are judges, as well as Lily Chen. So it's going to have a big wrap-up, I think, but I'm looking forward to seeing Nikki again after she got hurt on her tour in Europe. But it's been a pretty wonderful, and a lot of people are talking about it. I found out most about it from the Naughty Girls, who we know and love from the Podcasters Throwdown. Laura and Jen have talked a lot about Fiber Factor and a lot of conversation on Ravelry about it. And two Knit Lick Chicks yesterday were commenting about it too and credited Naughty Girls for really getting the word out. So.
Well, I think it's an exceptional thing that Karin and her crew have undertaken, because this is not just a simple challenge. It's an evolution of challenges along the way. It spans an entire year. Some of it's shot here, some of it's shot there. One of the episodes was shot at just Midwest. One of the episodes was shot, I'm sure, at Vogue Live. I mean, this is an evolution that's been planned out for having people go through the designer process, including, judging how they take their pictures and how they submit things, and very, very specific and very real world, and it's just this huge thing, and I'm very impressed with it.
It's been wonderful as far as educational, because storyboards and stuff, that's something that I knew from having a graphics background, but I had no idea that as a fashion designer you would have to have that kind of information in order to submit it. And I think Rick Mondragon, when he was a judge, really pointed out the photography needs to be exceptional as well to get the point across about the designs to show them off the best. So that was, I've really enjoyed and learned so much from this program. And the one thing that I'm wondering about, and I don't know and nobody else has really said, is if they're going to do another one.
Well, I think after you do any big event and any big thing like this, the first thing that needs to happen is everybody needs to sleep for about a year after it happens before they can even think about it. I hope they do. I hope they
do.
I think that it that might be something they'll announce maybe at the end of it. I'm glad you brought this up. This is something that I should have had as something I was talking about on the show. And So this is great, Tammy. Thank you for bringing us all up to speed about the Fiber Factor. And that can be found at, I believe, fiberfactor.com, correct?
Yes. They have tons of videos loaded up on YouTube. And like I said, there's lots of conversations. Everybody's talking about that right now.
That's really great. So did you have anything else you wanted to bring to our attention?
No. Everybody catch us all at the Stitches East. Looking forward to seeing and meeting everybody.
Well, this was great. You did a nice job on your pilot segment. We need to give your segment a cool name, don't you think?
Oh, okay.
Should we ask our Fiber Hooligans to think up something and post it in groups?
Yeah, hey, there's 450, I think, members in a Ravelry group. I'm sure there's some really creative minds in there that can come up with a wonderful idea. We have another 250, I think, on our Facebook group. So join us there. Give us some great ideas for names. That'd be awesome. Maybe, Benjamin, if you offered a prize for that.
I think I might. Again, very nice job today, and thanks for the report. And we'll all look forward to hearing from you again next Monday.
Yes. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing everybody there.
All right. You have a great day.
You too. Happy Monday.
Thanks. Bye. Well, that was Tammy Burke, our roving virtual reporter. She's pretty great, isn't she? She is the moderator of our Fiber Hooligans Facebook group and our Fiber Hooligans Ravelry group. For those of you who may have missed anything on this podcast, I invite you to join us on one of our groups. Tammy does a great job of making sure we answer questions and provide follow-up to anything you might ask about the show. Next Monday, I'm very pleased to announce that Kelly from Namaste Inc., the folks that make the beautiful Namaste bags, will be on the show. For those of you who don't know about them, Namaste is a very cool family-owned company that we have had the good fortune to work with for several years now. We have several people from XRX Inc., the crew, that seem to purchase one of their bags every time we see them. I think they're getting rich just off of us. If you've ever seen, been by their booth at Stitches or TNNA or any show they've done, you'll know why. There's a lot I want to share with you about Kelly and the Energetic Namaste team. It's going to be wonderful to have her on the show, and I hope you'll join us again next Monday for that. I want to make sure that you know that I'm eager to hear from you. You can email me questions, recommendations, critiques, and feedback at benjamin@fiberhooligan.com. I don't promise to respond to every email or message, but I do promise to do my best to read them all. If you ask a really great question or have an inspired idea, I may even read your email on the podcast. Maybe not. We'll see. Well, that's our show, Fiber Hooligans. As we slide on out of here today, I'd like to wish you all a glorious week. Remember, the only thing better than being creative is being kind to each other. The good news, you can do both. Thank you for spending this time with us. We'll see you next week on another edition of Fiber Hooligans.